The views expressed on the Buckmaster Radio program are not necessarily the views of Bill Buckmaster Communications, LLC, or its sponsors.
Hello, it's the Buckmaster Show. Tim Steller here, sitting in for Bill. He is still on vacation up in the great green and blue-skied north, as he showed today on Facebook. He was somewhere, I think, near Girdwood, Alaska, a place that, coincidentally, I visited a couple of weeks ago. Bill followed right in my tracks. I'm a columnist with the Arizona Daily Star, and I'm here with my colleague Joe Ferguson and Dylan Smith, editor of the Tucson Sentinel. We will be bringing in a couple of guests in the next half hour. Maybe I have a call here and there, but of course what we really want to get into, and this hour will barely allow us to dig in deep enough, is yesterday's primary election in Arizona.
We had an election?
Yeah, oh my goodness, did we have an election.
All right.
That was crazy.
I mean,
there is so much going on. So let us start with the U.S. Senate race, in which Martha McSally won the GOP nomination, and Kyrsten Sinema won the Democratic nomination. What did you think about those results, Dylan, especially on the GOP side?
I mean, you could see it coming from a good way off. I think pretty much right from the start, it seemed like a baseline assumption that the Tea Party folks on the right wing would divide between Joe Arpaio and Kelly Ward, and Martha McSally would
Conquer?
Not so much conquer, but just have her path eased a little bit. She didn't have to run quite as far to the right as her campaign may have been worried about. She certainly, really right out of the gate, tried to cozy up as much as possible with President Trump.
Yeah.
So that's going to create some hassles now running in the general election, because there are plenty of people with whom the president is not too popular.
Sure.
Right now.
For example, on the immigration issues, I don't know if you followed her comments, I think it was yesterday, about DACA. She famously or infamously deleted a post or a statement in which she embraced DACA. And then, so she deleted that, kind of demonstrating how firm she is on immigration. And then just yesterday, with victory in reach, she started kind of coming back on DACA. Is that right?
Yeah, this is her third position on DACA now that she's had in the last year. So it's an interesting kind of pivot one more time towards where Martha McSally is going to go in this race. And what we've all kind of assumed is that a run to the right in the primary, and then a run to the middle as we get through the election, which, I got to say, Kyrsten Sinema is probably doing the exact same thing.
Sure, and that's a traditional thing in all the big campaigns, that you run to the extreme or toward where your party is.
You want to get those, fervent partisan voters who turn out in the primary to go for you.
Yeah. One thing that struck me is, this is Kelly Ward's, second bite at the senatorial apple. Do you guys think she has a future anymore, or has she kind of used up her usefulness on, at least at this level in Arizona?
Her ambition seems to be the Senate, and I think there's only one more person that's being considered for pieces, and I don't see her being a nominee under Doug Ducey. She's made some pretty big bones about McCain, and therefore I think she's been disqualified from those public statements, especially the very recent
ones.
You
mean as far as being appointed?
Yeah, no way.
I cannot see Doug Ducey appointing her. She's way down at the bottom of his list on that. Will she run again? Sure.
She might. I think she's used up some of her credibility.
But will she have the sort of traction that she's gotten in the last couple of Republican primaries? Probably not.
No. And so I think that says something, the kind of Tea Party faction, which presents itself as the core of the Republican Party, and it's very convincing that way. Its bark is bigger than its bite. I mean, you add up
quite often.
Very often. And in this case, McSally got more than half the vote. Even if you threw in Joe Arpaio's vote, 53%. Even if you threw in Joe Arpaio's share of the vote, you would not catch up to Martha McSally.
So we can't say that Arpaio was a spoiler.
No. And so McSally will face Kirsten Sinema, who was an easy winner over challenger, kind of relative unknown, Deidre Aboud. How do you guys see that face-off happening?
Well, I think Kirsten's been able to run a race where she's been running for senator and having this almost no primary that she has to deal with. She didn't do debates. Mm-hmm. She didn't do any of that kind of stuff. So she's been asking for the Senate nomination all along, whereas McSally has been, you know, had to work on name recognition throughout the state, as well as, you know, fending off pointed criticism from both the left and the right over the last 6 months. Yeah,
certainly, Martha McSally is not as well known, or wasn't as well known across right. Arizona as she was down here.
Yeah. Amazing, yeah, really. It's really amazing, come to think of it, that she was able to get enough name recognition and such. Yeah, with a lot of money.
A whole
lot of money helped her do that. But still, she did it, you know, and she's proven again and again that she can do it. So I think she's going to be pretty formidable for the Republicans.
I think she is. And somebody put a very loud microphone next to her last night when Donald Trump decided to put his arm finally around her in a series of posts and tweets.
The president definitely stayed really far away from this primary race.
Yeah, he had lots to lose. Not
all three of those Republican candidates would have done just about anything to get his endorsement before the primary. Mm-hmm. And he wouldn't do it.
And they would have done anything to lose it before the general election, probably.
run quickly. Yeah, true, at this point, I mean, do you really want it now? This may help turn out some more Republicans, but for the folks in the middle, and, in as far as encouraging Democrats to show up and vote against you.
Yeah. You know. So we're going to bring Sarah Gasson on the line. She's editorial page editor at the Arizona Daily Star, also a colleague. Hey, Sarah, how's it going?
I'm good. How about you guys?
Pretty right. good. Hey, can you tell us what your thoughts are on the gubernatorial race where Doug Ducey won handily against Ken Bennett and the Republican side, obviously the incumbent Ducey, and on the Democratic side, David Garcia won pretty handily against Southern Arizona residents Steve Farley and Kelly Fryer. What are your thoughts on those races?
Well, I don't think anyone was surprised that Governor Ducey won handily in his primary. Ken Bennett ran kind of a bizarre campaign, if you could even call it that, and has sort of over the years kind of drifted off into the fringes of even right-wing Arizona politics. On the Democratic side, I thought voters had good choices among the three candidates. I'm not surprised that David Garcia came out on top over Kelly Fryer and Steve Farley because they're Southern Arizona. They're very well known here, but Maricopa County is obviously the center of the population, and David Garcia is a Maricopa County guy. He ran a very good campaign when he ran for school superintendent a few years ago, came within just a whisper of defeating Diane Douglas, who it looks like has been defeated for that role. But I think that it's going to be an interesting race. I think David Garcia is a solid candidate. I think that he'll match up well with Governor Ducey, and I hope that they will debate and appear together in public, because I think those could be some good conversations.
Yeah, that's a good point. Those are two pretty confident people that you could see really matching up in a debate. Joe, I notice here, I'm looking at the numbers on the Democratic side. Obviously, Ducey won by large margin, 70% to 30% about. The Democratic side, Garcia took about 49% of the vote to Farley's 34% and Fryer 17%. Is there anything in those numbers that tells you, you know, how this might have shaken out? Say, what if Kelly Fryer had not run? Would Steve Farley have taken this race, do you think, or is it not that simple?
I think that, you know, Steve had some issues in terms of being able to be well known in some of the corners of the state where he's just not. I mean, David Garcia has the advantage of being a statewide candidate once before and is unfortunately, you know, not from Phoenix, mm-hmm. where a large percentage of the voters are. And those are the ones that show up in these primaries is, you know, those live in metro areas. So I think Steve always was the underdog, even without Kelly Fryer in the race.
Yeah, Steve did have a money advantage, didn't he, Dylan? Am I remembering that?
Both he and Garcia were running for this for quite some time before Kelly Fryer got in. And, he raised a decent amount of money, but it is true that, we have a different perspective on candidates from Tucson because we're in Tucson. Yeah. We know them. We know their names. We're familiar with their records. Folks in Flagstaff and Kingman, maybe not so much. And then you've got, if somebody's from Phoenix and really made a name for themselves there, you can pretty much win just with Maricopa County votes.
Sure, sure, sure.
So it's kind of hard to say that, Kelly Fryer was a complete spoiler in this race. And I don't really know that every single one of her votes would have gone to Steve Farley. I mean, I think a significant, if she were not in the race, a significant number of those folks probably would have chosen Garcia instead.
Sarah, any thoughts on Kelly Fryer's appearance in local politics or Arizona politics? Do you think this is the last we're going to see of her?
No, I think I won't be surprised if she raises her hand again and gets into another race. She's been very active with the YWCA, and she's someone, obviously, with what she has said, dedication to public service, and I think was trying to ride the wave of women candidates coming into politics. I've seen people on Facebook and elsewhere commenting that she was a spoiler for Steve Farley, and that she kind of messed up his chances. I don't think that's true, and I also think that, and I'm saying this as an editorial person, not a news person like you fine folks, that if the Democratic Party is going to have any hope whatsoever in a very uphill gubernatorial race, they're going to have to get past that idea and come together behind their candidate.
We're going to have to go into the break soon. I just wanted to mention that I saw Kelly Fryer a couple of times, and I first was kind of curious what she was doing in the race. She doesn't have, any significant political experience. But as with Billy Kovacs, who we'll get to later, I think you saw in them some real skill or talent at politics. And so I won't be surprised if we see her again in some other race. Listen, we're going to have to close out this segment. We'll talk about the congressional races in the next one and go on to some local races. This portion of the Buckmaster Show is presented, quite the opposite. Presented by Mona's Danish Bakery, home of the Danish Kringle. Sounds so good. I think I'll get one for breakfast tomorrow. Mona's is located on the northeast corner of Swan and Sunrise. Owner Steve and Sherry do a lovely job with European baked goods, breads, pastries, cakes, and luscious brownies. They are open for lunch right now. You can head over there if you want. Mona's Danish Bakery is on the northeast corner of Swan and Sunrise in the Catalina foothills. Go to buckmastershow.com for a link to Mona's Danish Bakery.
In case you haven't heard, a recent state performance audit says the Regional Transportation Authority is meeting performance and budget expectations on voter-approved RTA plan delivery. Now in its 12th year of plan implementation, the RTA is committed to delivering the remaining projects with the community's support to improve our regional transportation system. Working together for a better future, visit rtamobility.com. This is Bill Buckmaster. I'm passionate about travel, visiting over 100 countries in all 50 states. And when I'm ready to take off, I fly from Tucson International Airport with 9 airlines flying nonstop to 22 destinations and easy one-stop connections. I can get virtually anywhere in the world. It's close by, convenient with competitive airfares, and there's no long drive coming back home after a long trip. Travel smart and fly Tucson. Check out flytucson.com. Vero Amore is Tucson's only certified authentic Neapolitan wood-fired pizza, where every flavorful pizza, pasta, panini, and salad is homemade using the finest local and imported ingredients. Vero Amore, Plaza Palomino and on Dove Mountain Boulevard in Marana, plus a full catering menu and mobile pizza truck for parties and events. Vero Amore on the web at veroamore.com. As a small business owner, I know the importance of a certified public accountant you can trust. That's why I recommend my CPA, Michael C. Flowers of Flowers, Rieger & Associates, proud sponsors of the Buckmaster Show. Located at 2919 East Broadway and on the web at flowersrieger.com or follow the live link on buckmastershow.com.
Did you know that you can check out complete digital editions of popular magazines with your Pima County Public Library card? From Arizona Highways to Yoga Journal and everything in between, the library is your source for entertainment. Visit library.pima.gov and browse the e-library to start checking out your favorite magazines today. That's library.pima.gov.
Are you happy with the news you get? While not all news is good news, you know good reporting when you see it. Check TucsonSentinel.com every day for breaking news and investigative reports. Have your say in the comments. It's all in TucsonSentinel.com, your local, independent, nonprofit news. You can rely on TucsonSentinel.com for solid reporting about immigration, Tucson and Pima politics, everything from the border to baseball. It's independent news without the spin. TucsonSentinel.com. We are watching Tucson.
This is Bill Buckmaster. The Buckmaster Show features Arizona newsmakers and more than two dozen Buckmaster Show contributors. Everything from foreign affairs to the arts is on the table and open for discussion, and of course, your calls from one end of Southern Arizona to the other. Buckmaster, weekdays, noon to 1 on AM 1030, KVOI, Tucson's voice.
We're back on the Bill Buckmaster Show. This is Tim Steller of the Arizona Daily Star. I'm sitting here with my colleague Joe Ferguson of the Star also, and Dylan Smith on my left of the Tucson Sentinel. We're trying to race through a bunch of races a lot of them were surprising from yesterday's Arizona primary election. I want to go right away to the congressional races. Dylan, could you tell us your thoughts on CD2, where Leah Marquez Peterson squeaked out a victory on the Republican side and Ann Kirkpatrick had a more solid victory on the Democratic side?
I was really surprised by the strong performances we saw from everybody else in that GOP primary. Mm-hmm. You've got, three people who got more than 20% of the vote in there? And, so you've got Leah Marquez Peterson with, the last time I checked, she's looking at, 33%?
Yeah, 30, like closer to 34, but yeah.
So, that is a pretty narrow margin, 3-4 points. And if there'd been one less candidate in there, running against her from the right, she might have not even won.
Yep. Joe, thoughts on the Democrats?
I think that, we were expecting a close race with Hines and Kirkpatrick just by the amount of money being spent in the airwaves that were being flooded. And so I was expecting a squeaker. So I was a little surprised to see with the high amount that Kirkpatrick got.
A 10-point lead was seems to jump out there.
Yeah, it was. She's so far, so even 11 points at this stage in the counting. And I was really taken aback by, we saw there was just tons of negative advertising and mailers against Hines as the campaign wound down. And so I took from that, perhaps incorrectly, that somebody was seeing Ann Kirkpatrick in danger. I don't know. Did you guys feel that same way? I thought Hines had an equal chance to win as she did. What did you think?
Well, Hines was pushing some polling that had him ahead of Kirkpatrick, and that might have had him scared. We never did see any polling that went public from Kirkpatrick's side. So those two things together suggested that maybe the race was a lot closer than we thought it was. Mm-hmm. But, an influx of $500,000 in the last 2 weeks of the race suggests that, somebody somewhere was very concerned about it.
And you got to wonder how many, beyond those the two front runners, the main contenders in that race, how many people, when they finally came down to fill out their ballot, chose one of the other candidates? You had seven people on the ballot listed. It was most of those other candidates, were underperformed the two leaders, but still they got a significant fraction of the vote.
I'm looking here at the number. It looks like they got about 28% of the total, the remaining five candidates. It really makes you wonder, makes me wonder, if a progressive liberal candidate, if it had been Ann Kirkpatrick versus one progressive, how that would have played out if it was, say, a Mary Mathieu or a Bruce Wheeler, leaving out Matt Hines for the moment. I wouldn't have been surprised to see the progressive win, but Ann Kirkpatrick had such an institutional advantage.
And that's what I was about to say, is that, you know, anybody that was other than Matt Hines who could demonstrate that he could raise the cash would have been just snowed by, you know, a literal train from people supporting Kirkpatrick. They couldn't fundraise. I mean, it was difficult for even people like Mary Mathieu, who was backed by Grijalva, to fundraise
and
money.
And Democratic player Bill Rowe right out of the gate.
Sure.
Gave her a significant contribution.
Big player.
When she was, you know, one of the first to jump in the race. But then Kirkpatrick got in and really changed the entire dynamic of what was going on.
I'd say on the Republican side also, there's the same dynamic that if it had been one conservative, say if it had been just Brandon Martin and not Danny Morales, you might well have seen him beat Leah Marquez Peterson.
I think we saw from the start not the greatest amount of enthusiasm from the Republican rank and file, especially the Tea Party folks, for Leah Marquez Peterson. She did not file the most signatures on nominating petitions. And usually, you know, candidates are really trying to push that so they can show that they've got, you know, grassroots support and all of that. And if there hadn't been so many others trying to run at her from the right, it would have been a very, very different race. And we might have seen them out a little bit more in public. Mm-hmm. You know, all these races, I don't know what I was going to say about the Senate race and, you know, the governor's races. We haven't, seen all that much public engagement as far as debates and appearing in public and answering questions.
We got a caller who wants to chime in.
I was just going to comment that I was very surprised how far Ann was ahead of Matt in that race, and I wondered to what degree does she owe that to the Giffords and Ron Barber endorsement? Because I think she was, you know, late to get her ads up, I think that endorsement may have had bigger impact than we all realized.
Yeah, thanks for the point. Appreciate it. Any thoughts on that, guys?
I think that is one endorsement coming from Gabby Giffords that may be a little bit different here in Tucson. You know, usually I'm pretty skeptical of, you know, the lengthy lists of endorsements that people put out. Really, the only ones that are meaningful are the kind of organizations that can bring people to the game. If you can bring volunteers to phone bank for you, that's a very different thing than, you know, some prominent name. But Gabby's a little bit of a different sort of political player.
It also gave some credence to Kirkpatrick's newfound religion on guns.
Yeah.
I mean, was a blue dog for a long time and said, I changed my mind. And that, and Gabby's arm around her gave her some credence on that position.
Credibility,
And that's something that Hines really tried to blast her on.
So to speak. On CD1, I thought it was a bit of a surprise. Wendy Rogers, after many, many attempts at office, finally won a race. She beat Steve Smith and Tiffany Shedd in the Republican side. So she'll be facing incumbent Democrat Tom O'Halloran. This is a district that goes from the northwest side of Tucson all the way up to the Navajo Nation, over to Flagstaff and Sedona, which I believe is where O'Halloran lives. Any thoughts on Wendy Rogers, guys?
I think Wendy Rogers really changed a little bit of who she was this year by fully embracing Trump. I mean, her signs boast of it. She hands out pictures of her with the president on a tarmac somewhere. I mean, that's really been, you know, one of the ways that she has changed her message and her voice and her, you know, credibility in the race.
Yeah, I noticed that she's been real harsh on Democrats and liberals. She's kind of had that demonization going, and it's going to be interesting to see if she tries to or is able to dial that back a bit and be more of the moderate force that has typically won in that district. Let me ask you, Dylan, about three in the GOP side. Obviously, Raul Grijalva is running for re-election. Nick Pearson beat Sergio Arellano and Edna San Miguel. He won 51% of the vote, which surprised me. What did you think about that?
I was really shocked. I did not see that happening, especially with that sort of margin of victory. That I thought it would be a closer race. And if you would have asked me a couple months ago, I would have very much given the edge to Arellano. So
yeah.
I'm still, don't quite, haven't wrapped my head around how those votes shifted that way towards the end of the race. Of course, trying to unseat Raul Grijalva is, that is a very large windmill to be tilting at. It's almost impossible.
Right. Joe, any thoughts on, do you have any idea why Sergio Arellano, who is pretty well-known activist in the Republican Party, how he ended up?
I think he appealed to a group of people inside the Republican Party that really liked him as a hometown boy. But, his roots aren't, as deep as, say, Pearson's are, who's spent a lot of time in the community working on smaller projects, mm-hmm. including, being very active in, say, South Tucson or tribal issues.
All right. Thanks. We'll have to wrap up this segment. And when we get back, we'll be talking about some of the legislative and statewide races that we haven't got to. So much more interesting stuff. And we'll be right back.
Family-owned Jam Culinary Concepts and its family of restaurants has you covered for your special event. Jam caters anytime, anywhere, any size group, and any type of cuisine. Vero Amore, authentic Neapolitan pizza, and Noble Hops. Craft beer and fine fare are synonymous with quality. Call 954-1468 or log on to jamculinaryconcepts.com. This is Bill Buckmaster. I love travel and flying from Tucson International Airport. And when you fly Tucson, you're standing up for Tucson. When more people fly Tucson, airlines respond with more flights. And with more flights, more travelers can get here to conduct important business. It's a win for the region, and it's a win for you in time saved and money saved not traveling to an airport 2 hours away. Travel smart and fly Tucson. Check out flytucson.com.
Southern Arizona is home to one of the world's most trusted sources of information on medicines. The Credible Meds website is visited each day by over 2,000 people from more than 60 countries. You too can learn how to personalize your medications and take control of your health care. Visit CredibleMeds.org today and join Bill Buckmaster each month as he and Dr. Ray Woosley, founder of Credible Meds, give you practical tips on how to get the most from your medications.
Cushman & Wakefield PICOR is Tucson's leading independently owned full-service commercial real estate company. Founded in 1985, Cushman & Wakefield PICOR offers leasing, sales, and property management for industrial, office, medical, retail, land, and investment properties in Tucson and Sonora, Mexico. Visit our website at PICOR.com for the latest news from Tucson's commercial real estate sector. That's PICOR.com. Call us at 748-7100. This is Bill Buckmaster. Green Things has been the place for all things green for the Buckmaster household for many years. From 2-inch succulents to 10-foot tall palms and desert trees, Green Things has it all on 13 acres and 33 greenhouses full of plants, pottery, and gardening supplies. Visit Green Things at 3384 East River Road by the Rito Riverwalk and on the web at greenthingsaz.com. Noble Hops is Tucson's original gastro pub, serving an impressive menu of craft beer and fine fare. Choose from more than 175 beers from around the world, plus wine and a full bar. Enjoy delicious soups, salads, burgers, sandwiches, hearty entrees, and more. Craft beer, fine fare, great service, and stunning views. Noble Hops, perfect for lunch, dinner, happy hour, late night, and any time in between. Open daily at La Cañada and Lambert Lane in Oro Valley.
This is the Bill Buckmaster Show. It's Tim Steller of the Arizona Daily Star sitting in for Bill, who is in Alaska. Joe Ferguson, my colleague from the Arizona Daily Star, is here, as is Dylan Smith. And joining us on the phone is Danielle Camara of the Tucson Weekly. Welcome, Danielle.
Thanks for having me.
Sure. Hey, tell me, what races were you most focused on, especially in the legislative side this?
I'm following Legislative District 9 pretty closely in the Senate and the House. Also, I was following 3, Legislative District 3 a bit, as well as 10 and 11 were kind of the ones I was focused on.
Yeah, tell me about 3. I thought there were some surprising results that came out of that. Let me see. In the Senate side, it was Sally Ann Gonzalez. It was an open seat, right? And Sally Ann Gonzalez won 55% of the vote to Betty Villegas' 44.6%. Tell us about that race.
Yeah, so Sally Ann Gonzalez, she was the incumbent, and she won, so she gets to keep her seat. Betty Villegas, she works in the county, and she was hoping to kind of come in as the newcomer and unseat the incumbent, but she was unsuccessful in that bid.
Now, there are
no Republicans. GOP fielded no candidates for the House or Senate.
So this election's over. That's it. Yeah, and
that's a very Democratic district.
So, as I recall, Raul Grijalva and his political allies weighed in on this race in favor of the challenger. Is that right?
That's correct. Yeah, that's correct. It's kind of been there was kind of a newcomers against incumbents vibe there. If you know, to switch over to the House, very interesting, looks like Olivia Cahero Bedford, the incumbent there, was unseated. And even though she was incumbent, and she's been kind of switching back and forth in that district from the House to the Senate for a long time, she was running as, not as a newcomer, but as an anti-establishment candidate, but that was an unsuccessful kind of run, and she was unseated by 2 newcomers, Andre Cano and Alma Hernandez, who are both young and up and coming, and that was a really close race.
Yeah, so it looks like, we should mention, Olivia Cahero Bedford has been in the legislature, I believe, for something like a dozen terms,
She, you know, she's termed out in the House, and then switched over to the Senate, and then termed out there, going back to the House, you know, back and forth a few times. Which you're allowed to do. You just can't serve that long in the one office. You can switch between the two
chambers,
houses of the legislature.
And she too is a Grijalva ally, as I recall. As is the top vote getter, Andres Cano. Less so Alma Hernandez, who is the sister of Daniel Hernandez, well-known legislator, former Sunnyside School Board member, and he made his name for his role in helping Gabby Giffords after she was shot on January 8th, 2011.
Right.
Yeah, so it looks like one of the really interesting, another thing about Olivia Cahero Bedford, as I recall, both of her parents served in the legislature for a long, decades, I believe, was the total of both of them. So it's kind of goodbye to a long, both personal and family political career for her. And hello to a couple newcomers who are pretty young. Are either of them over 30? Do you know?
No, they're both in their 20s.
Right. So they both have potential for a long career coming up.
Mm-hmm.
So we'll have likely to have, if Daniel wins, Daniel representing one district and Alma Hernandez representing the other as siblings.
He still has a general election to get through.
Yeah, Daniel has an election. Let's switch over to let's hold off on that race till Dan Shearer joins us later. LD9, as you mentioned, was the one where, let me see, J.P. Martin was the challenger to...
Exactly, against Pamela Powers Hanley and Randy Free as the incumbent.
And what happened there? I mean, how did that race play out?
The two incumbents, they beat J.P. Martin by a landslide. The two of them, Pamela Powers Handy and Randy Fries, took the stage last night at the Pima County Democrat Selection Party and basically said they're ready for the general. They're going to face Republican Anna Henderson, and they felt pretty confident that they will beat her in the general.
Yeah, Anna Henderson ran in 2016 and lost. I can't remember the the margin, but it was not really close, as I recall.
Yeah.
Let's move on to LD10. I found this a really interesting race on the Democratic side. We had four candidates, one incumbent, Kirsten Engel, and three newcomers, Domingo de Gracia, Catherine Ripley, and Nikki Lee.
Nikki Lee.
Yeah. So Engel has solidly won nomination again. Looks like de Gracia is eking out.
He's barely leading, yeah. Okay. He's leading by around 400 votes from Catherine Ripley, and then trailing her is Nikki Lee.
Now, de Gracia is an attorney, is that right? Is that his trade?
Yeah, he's a local attorney, and, you know, so Domingo de Gracia has some more name recognition, being the son of the famous artist Ted de Gracia. So some people say that may be why he kind of is coming out ahead. All four candidates in that race seem to be well-liked. They all seem to get along. Catherine Ripley and Nikki Lee are both veterans. But
military veterans, you mean?
Military veterans.
Yeah, yeah.
But the three of them are all political newcomers. Mm-hmm. So it was kind of a toss-up to see who would take the lead. And yeah, they're all coming in with really close to 20% of the vote, whereas Kristen Engel, the incumbent, has almost twice as many votes as any of them. Mm-hmm. So yeah, it looks like Domingo de Gracia might be the one that goes to the general with Kristen Engel.
So Dylan, in this district, as I recall, it's a Democratic-leaning district, but represented by one Republican, is that right?
You know, it seems like every election cycle, somewhere in the Tucson area, the Republicans manage to get somebody elected to the House, generally.
In a
Democratic-leaning district.
And rotating Republican.
Yeah. And it kind of bounces around as far as which LD that ends up being, but...
Ethan Orr, and then we had...
Chris Ackerley.
Ackerley, and...
Now Todd Klobfelter. Yeah. So Todd Klobfelter is the incumbent Republican. He had run several times for office and was kind of a surprise victor over Stephanie Mock last election. He will have a tough challenge, I'm guessing, because Democrats seem motivated and the numbers are a little stacked against him.
So which Republican is it going to be who manages
to
sneak
through? Right, so which Republican will squeak one out this time? Yeah, that's a good question. That name, though, Domingo de Gracia. Engel has a record now and is pretty well known in the district. Domingo de Gracia, though, I would love to have that name and run for office in Tucson, you know? My goodness. Let's move on to LD11. That's an interesting district up on the northwest side and up into Pinal County all the way over to the town of Maricopa. The incumbent is Mark Fincham. There was two other candidates, Brett Roberts and Howell, quote, Jonesy, unquote, Jones. Roberts, sorry about that. That's the way his name was listed on the ballot.
That is.
Yeah, that's right. So Fincham, not surprisingly, got almost half the votes, 48.8%. Brett Roberts came in second at 37.3%. On the Dem side, and Jones lost at 18%. Hollis Lyon got 43% of the vote. Marcela Quiroz, 41%. And Barry McCain, 15%. So obviously this is a House race, so the top two vote-getters move on. So it'll be Fincham and Roberts on the GOP side versus Lyon and Quiroz on the Democratic side. Any thoughts on this race, guys?
Well, you know, this is a very Republican-leaning district. It's, northwest suburbs of Tucson and then stretching into Pinal County. Mm-hmm. And it's generally been a pretty hard hill for the Democrats to have a chance in there.
Mm-hmm. I agree, but I mean, we have seen an unprecedented turnout for Dems this year in a primary that, you know, is very large.
Yeah. is it unprecedented?
It might be.
Is it unprecedented, though, I think is the question.
It surpassed the 2016 numbers by quite a large margin.
You would think that in a presidential year, even if it wasn't a presidential primary, people are more involved, more engaged, paying even more attention. But the Dems had more turnout this year in this off-year election.
So I think that there's some juice in terms of seeing Dems show up in places you wouldn't expect them to.
And will the GOP turnout be down a little bit?
Go ahead,
are they not showing up?
Go ahead, Daniel.
I was just going to going to say, that said, you know, apart from this idea that there could be a blue wave, you know, Mark Fincham and Vince Leach, who hold those seats right now, are pretty far right. And Vince Leach is running for the Senate in that district.
Right.
So, you know, it would definitely be quite a shift. You know, they're not moderate Republicans in those seats. So it would be quite a shift if a Democrat were to gain one of those seats.
We're talking about a seat, though, that was once held by Al Melvin. This isn't exactly a place where there have been moderates for a long period of time.
It's a feature, not a bug, to be far on the right in that district.
Exactly.
I should mention Hollis Lyon. I wrote a bit about her some months ago. What was stunning about her at that time is that she had raised, oh God, it was already $70,000+ in something like April or May. And she has run before, as has her spouse, Linda Lyon, her wife. And they are a pretty well-known quantity in that area. So it's possible we could have a pop-up Dem, a whack-a-mole Dem, rather than a pop-up Republican in this particular race in the Tucson area. We are going to move out here on this portion of the show, come back and talk about some of the local and state races we haven't got to yet. This portion of the Buckmaster Show was presented by Silver City and Grant County, New Mexico, just 3 hours east of Tucson. So much to do in Silver City and Grant County, New Mexico, like exploring historic downtown Silver City or visiting the world-famous Cliff Dwellings National Monument. I've done that. I really recommend it. For a complete listing of the many things to do and great places to stay, visit southwestnewmexico.org.
The Regional Transportation Authority funds projects to help make our transportation system safe, reliable, and efficient. Improve regional mobility is important for economic vitality for businesses and families. The RTA continues to finance construction work for 6 new roadway projects scheduled in 2018. For more information on RTA projects, visit rtamobility.com. The RTA is delivering its promise to you.
Did you know that you can check out complete digital editions of popular magazines with your Pima County Public Library card? From Arizona Highways to Yoga Journal and everything in between, the library is your source for entertainment. Visit library.pima.gov and browse the e-library to start checking out your favorite magazines today. That's library.pima.gov.
If you're searching for that special one-of-a-kind item, may I suggest Adobe House Antiques. It has a vast collection and variety of antiques, lighting, and fine art. In addition to the interior space, a large outdoor location offers an extensive collection of vintage patio furniture, exterior lighting, and ironwork. Come see Penny at 2700 North Campbell, 325-9439, or on the web at adobehouseantiques.com.
Hi, it's Suzanne Miller from your Better Business Bureau serving Southern Arizona, here to remind you to start with trust and look for the BBB accredited seal when searching for a product or service. Did you know you can request a quote directly from any of our accredited businesses? With over 3,000 accredited businesses in Southern Arizona, you will find a business you can trust. Whether you need a product or service from one company or an entire industry, go to tucson.bbb.org and start your search today.
The Green Valley News and Sarita Sun cover two of Arizona's most desirable communities. The newspapers reach more than 75% of the communities each week, with a combined population of more than 50,000. The Green Valley News also publishes a dozen magazines each year, and both newspapers publish up-to-the-minute local news online at gvnews.com. The Green Valley News and Sarita Sun, it's all right here.
Hey, it's Matt Russell from The Buckmaster Show.
And this is Ryan Hansen from Bon Voyage Travel.
I am so pumped to be partnering with Bon Voyage on my next culinary and cocktail cruise.
This is definitely a cruise for foodies as you experience the Mediterranean on Celebrity Cruises.
And the private excursions that your team has arranged for us? I mean, come on, an ouzo distillery tour in Greece? A food and wine day on Malta?
We'll handle everything, so all you and your guests need to do is eat, drink, and be happy.
Go to bvtravel.com/Matt Russell to learn more.
Family-owned Jam Culinary Concepts and its family of restaurants has you covered for your special event. Jam caters anytime, anywhere, any size group, and any type of cuisine. Vero Amore, authentic Neapolitan pizza, and Noble Hops. Craft beer and fine fare are synonymous with quality. Call 954-1468 or log on to jamculinaryconcepts.com.
This is Tim Steller from the Arizona Daily Star, sitting in for Bill Buckmaster today. We've got some exciting news from Green Things. Zocalo Fine Mexican Imports is now located on the 13-acre Green Things site on River Road just west of the Brandy Fenton Park, with all the great Zocalo merchandise from Mexico and Latin America. Check out Green Things for all your gardening needs on the web at greenthingsaz.com. We have Dan Shearer of the Green Valley News, Howard Sun, on the phone with me, and Dylan Smith of the Tucson Sentinel, and Joe Ferguson of the Arizona Daily Star. How are you doing, Dan?
I'm doing great. And you want to know who won the election?
Yeah, sure. Who won?
The entire town of Sahuarita. You know, our voter turnout for a town council race was about 73%.
That is crazy.
Yeah, pretty stunning. So, yeah. I don't know what's the whole state around 25.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. So, it was right about 25 last I checked. I was trying to get party breakdowns, but they don't have that yet. Well,
yeah,
so
and.
Go ahead.
A very, very competitive race, three open seats and six people in the race, plus one fairly strong write-in candidate, believe it or not. We had a great town council forum in July, so great turnout, and so we'll see what happens in the general, but it's really good to see people getting involved and figuring out that all politics is local.
Oh, yeah. Speaking of which, you are down in LD2, and there were some fascinating races there. Okay, there was one fascinating race there. That's the the GOP primary for state senate.
Right.
Surprised by the results there?
I was not surprised that Shelley Keis won, but I expected her to beat Bobby Wilson a little more handily than it appears that she's going to, and it's roughly 52-48%. And Bobby Wilson, of course, made national headlines with the revelation, you know, that he had killed his mother back when he was a teenager, and it was a case that eventually is dismissed. He went on to a law career out in Texas, came here about 20 years ago, and we got an inkling about a year ago that he was going to perhaps run for office, and then he did jump in, and definitely a hard right candidate, and it does not appear that he's going to advance. That was the only LD2 race that was contested in the primary, but the general is going to be very, very interesting.
Yeah, it's going to be a hot race. So that'll be Shelley Keis, who's run before, versus Andrea D'Alessandro.
The incumbent
Democrat. Now, Keis, let me remind me what has she run for before? She ran for CD2
in 14.
In 14. This is about this is a race that potentially the district's tough for Republicans, right? But
it is.
There's potential.
Yeah, they're still getting used to the fact that, you know, the redistricting years and years ago turned this from a very strong Republican district to Democratic. And as you had mentioned before, Chris Ackerley had broken through a couple years ago with a win and then lost last time to Daniel Hernandez. So he is back in it. Chris is one of the Republicans who, along with Anthony Sizer, will be taking on Rosana Gabaldon and Daniel Hernandez in the general. And it is an uphill battle. And Chris largely won last time when he served that one term in the legislature by making a very strong presence in Nogales. And he went down there, and they saw him a lot. And the more they saw him, the more they liked him. He didn't win Santa Cruz County, but he did much better there than people expected. And I think he has that same strategy going into this.
Now, if I recall correctly, though, he won against Damian Klinko, who was an appointed legislator, and frankly, I don't think did the work, or at least didn't appeal adequately down there in Santa Cruz County, whereas our current incumbents, Daniel Hernandez and Rosana Gabaldon, maybe have more of a pull down there. I don't know. What do you think?
They do. I mean, Rosanna's been in the community for a long time. She served on the town council, and she's well-liked and tends to do well in fundraising. Daniel also does well in fundraising. But remember, last 2 years ago, he actually came in third in Green Valley votes in the Democratic primary for this race. So he's not as beloved here, but probably is so compared to any Republican. So he will it'll be a good race, and Anthony Sizer is, you know, largely an unknown quantity. You mentioned Damian Klinko. You're right. He had been in the job just for a few months.
Yeah.
And he had done actually a lot of work while in the legislature. We had the immigration issue going on at the border, and he made sure he was there, and he did some good things, but he did not have the standing that an incumbent really would have. So he was easily knocked off by Chris.
Right. Joe, in the Justice of the Peace races are not usually that exciting, although they become more so lately. In the 5th JP district here in Pima County, we had a Keith B running, which is not unusual, right?
I think we should refer to him as Son of B, because that's the real kind of thing that goes to this, is that, you know, a lot of people were very confused about who was running, whether it was Keith B. Sr., who's been on the bench and is well-respected and has won awards for his service, or his 20-year-old son that doesn't have a law degree.
21-year-old.
21. He turned 21 during the race.
21-year-old son that has no law experience whatsoever.
Now, correct me if I'm wrong. Did he not use the same signs but add a little Roman numeral 2 after the name Keith B.?
I was trying to find that out, but I really couldn't nail it down.
Okay,
but that,
okay.
There is a suspicion to that.
Yeah. So he was a 21-year-old kind of who maybe people would have been fooled into thinking was the father. He ended up losing by about 10 percentage points, as I recall, 55 to 45 to Doug Taylor, I think is his name, who's actually an attorney with some years of experience.
And this is in the GOP primary.
In the GOP primary. There was the talk of a write-in candidate. Dylan, did that person get enough votes?
I haven't seen the final figures, and it's going to maybe come down to the, you know, whatever votes came in yesterday. Alisa Cunningham, the wife of City Councilman Paul Cunningham, mounted a write-in candidate. She basically wanted to get herself on the ballot for November in case Keith B. won.
Mm-hmm.
I think she'll be okay with having an experienced attorney running. And we still don't know. I'm not aware of whether she got the enough write-in votes. She needed like 555 write-in votes.
Yeah.
And the figures I saw last night showed her falling well short of that.
Yeah, a few dozen or something.
Those are the last to be counted in any of these kind of things.
Okay.
You need to get the same number of write-ins as you would have had petition signatures to get yourself on the ballot. So it's a really tough thing to do in election.
Yeah. Dan, have you been following the Arizona Corporation Commission race with our former Southern Arizonan Rodney Glassman running?
Yes, who does look like he's going to go on through to the general election as a Republican, which may surprise a few people who have been paying attention, and he's been one for a few years. But these races normally are very boring, and people don't pay attention to them. This was an important year, and the results are very interesting. The people at the bottom of the ballot who will not be going on include Eric Sloan, who was dumped a couple of years ago from a state job, fired for having what they called a frat party type atmosphere.
The story you broke down there, Dan.
There we go. And then Tom Farris, who was the chair of the Corporation Commission, and he had been involved in APS funding campaigns in the past, and I'm so glad that voters paid attention to this race and saw the importance of figuring out who these people were and rewarding those who should go on and, frankly, punishing those who shouldn't. This was very buoying for me to see the results. I was really glad to see it.
Bill Mundell, also on the Democratic side, was the one left out.
In a three-way race,
and he also is the only one in that race who had previously held the office.
Sandra Kennedy was also.
Sandra Kennedy was also.
He was had more experience. He'd previously been the chair of the Arizona Corporation Commission. But yeah, we have two Democratic candidates, Sandra Kennedy and Kiana Sears, basically beating him. Pretty handily.
Yeah. And so speaking of voters actually paying attention and making choices, incumbents have lost in the Republican primaries in both the Secretary of State and the Superintendent of Public Instruction races. Michelle Reagan will be losing her job as Secretary of State. Diane Douglas as Superintendent of Public Instruction. Any thoughts on that, guys?
I was surprised.
Yeah. I mean, Secretary of State. So Gaynor, the winner, Steve Gaynor, the winner of the Secretary of State's race, won handily. I think it was a 2-1 margin or so. Now, Michelle Reagan had suffered from basically poor job performances, as far as I can tell.
Exactly.
Yeah. Well, listen, it's been great. We actually touched on almost every race that mattered. Well, not that mattered, but that was interesting.
Got close.
And I want to thank you all for joining me. And thanks, Bill, for giving us the opportunity here on the Bill Buckmaster Show.